Okay, today's daf is Kaf Bet. We're going to start, we'll just review from the bottom, from Tanya, the last three lines. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Omer lo yaskir adam sadeh ulikuti, mipnei shenikret al shmo. Right? One can't rent sadeh. By the way, the rental of the sadeh here, we're talking about only in the cases where rental of a field would be allowed. Yesterday we had a whole thing about how you can't rent a field out, only in particular situations, like in, for example, in Chutz La'aretz, or maybe in, right, there were certain situations where it was allowed. In the case where it's allowed, you can't do it to a kuti because the field is considered in your name. V'kuti zeh sebo melacha b'cholosh ha'moed. Right? They'll see the kuti doing melacha on chol ha'moed and they'll assume he's working for you. Aval oved kochav imai sharei. Now there's an assumption, which is a strange assumption. But the assumption here is, if for a kuti, it says specifically for a kuti it's asur, it sounds like it's only asur for a kuti and not for a non-Jew. So they say if that's the case, what's the reason why an Avei Kochavim would be Share? Da'amre Arisa Arisute Avi, right? There's an assumption that he's a sharecropper and he's taking his share from the Shabbat part. You know, he can decide when he wants to do. So Vihachi Kutinami Amre Arisa Arisute Avi. Why can't you say the same thing for the Kuti? The people won't assume it's the Jew getting benefit from the Malacha, you know, or he hired him. It's that the guy's an Aris and he's doing it on his own time. So the answer is Arisuta the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar lately. It seems that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar doesn't hold by Arisut at all. Well, if that's the case, then Ela Oveh Kochavim, my time of Mutar. And what's the reason the Oveh Kochavim is allowed to do this? Damrina Le Vitzayit. The assumption is that you can rent out your field to a non-Jew and tell him, please don't work this field on Shabbat. And he'll actually listen to you. Okay? So then they say, Kuti nami amrina levitzayit. So why don't you say the same thing to a kuti? In other words, here there's this interesting assumption. After all these negative sources about these Ovdei Kochavim, we actually show here that, no, the Ovdei Kochavim actually respect Jews, and if a Jew wants to rent him his field, and the Jew says, I'll rent you the field under the condition that you don't work the field on Shabbat, then the assumption is he'll listen to you. So they say, what about a kuti? Kuti nami amrina levitzayit. Why don't you say the same thing? Tell the kuti you can rent the field, but just don't use it on Shabbat. So again, why is it forbidden to rent it to the kuti, but permitted to do it to the Ovei Kochavim? So the answer is, kuti lo tzayit, da'amar ana gemirna tvei minach. The kuti is going to say, I know better than you. I know that it's allowed. Sorry, we're talking here about, if I said Shabbat, I was just confused. We're talking about Malach on Chol HaMoed. The kuti is going to say, I know better than you. There's no Isra Malach on Chol HaMoed, because remember, it doesn't say anything explicitly in the Torah, and that's where the kutis follow this strict Torah reading, and we follow the Darabanan, who say that it's Asur Du Malach on Chol HaMoed. And therefore, he'll say, I know better than you, and I don't need to follow your rules that you're claiming, because I don't agree with your rules. So here's an interesting, right, that non-Jews sometimes are more respectful of Jews when it comes to their religious practice than Jews themselves, who are, let's say, not makpid on halakha in the same way, will kind of disregard what you're doing and say, oh, you know, I don't believe in that.
It's harder to work for a Jew.
Right, it's harder to work for a Jew than a non-Jew if you want to take off on all your vacations, etc. Okay, so that's an interesting, there you see it explicitly in the Gemara. So, ihachim, but if that's the case, what are we worried about? We're worried that the kuti is going to do malach on chol ha'moed. And what's the issue? Well, the issue is not just my iriyam mipnei shenikret al shmo. It's not really, or it's not only that we're worried that the field is in your name and people will think. Again, what's the issue here? The issue is marit ayin. People will see that you're having workers on your field on chol ha'moed, and what will they think? They'll think that it's allowed to work on chol ha'moed, and they'll, what's marit ayin? Marit ayin is, right, there's two different concepts that come up in this type of area. One is marit ayin, which is that we're worried people are going to see and then they'll think it's mutar. We already discussed yesterday with this bathhouse where they thought the Jews can't do malacha, and then they say, oh no, actually Jews can do the same malacha in the bathhouse, right? You can warm up water, you can do things like that on chol ha'moed. It was clear that there was a bit of a confusion about what exactly is asur on chol ha'moed and what is mutar. And because of that, if you saw someone working in the guy's field, you might say, oh, that's okay for me to do on chol ha'moed, so I'll do that also. That's marit ayin. People will think that it's allowed. There's other cases where there's chashad, where we're worried that people are going to suspect that you're doing wrongdoing and they'll, you know, spread bad things about you. That's something different. Marit ayin is more of a concern that they'll see you doing it, they'll think it's allowed. What did you want to ask?
I remember in Moed Katan, mm-hmm. there were things you could do on chol ha'moed.
Yes, there are certain things you could do on chol ha'moed, yes,
in a field.
Right, so I don't remember all the details about it.
You could dig a groove if there are animals, do you remember?
And then you have a good memory. I don't remember all the cases.
You kind of work in a field. Mm-hmm. You know,
right. So there definitely are certain things we could do. I remember there being stories about people who were working in a field. There was something. It's a whole issue about it. I don't remember all the details. Okay, so now they're going to say like this. So, my iriam ifnei shenekreit al shmo, tipuklei mishum lefnei ver lo titei mechshol. Right? We view the shomronim as Jews, and therefore, what are you doing? You're causing them to be over on a malacha, right? They don't think it's Esther, but you do. And therefore, by you renting the field, you know he's going to work on Shabbat. And then it should be forbidden, not because ifnei shenekreit al shmo, but it should be forbidden because of lefnei ver lo titei mechshol. You're basically, by renting him the field, you're enabling your, making it easier for him to work on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara answers, Chada ve'od. It's one and another, Ka'amar, okay? Which is, Chada mishum lifnei iver, ve'od b'yipdeshin dekret al shmo. It's actually both of them. Hanhu morikai, okay, it's not a Moroccan. Morikai is saffron growers, okay? They were growing saffron, de ovei kochavim. Okay, there were these people that were growing saffron for an ovei kochavim. There were these saffron growers, de ovei kochavim naki b'shabta, v'Yisrael b'cha b'shabta. Okay, there was a partnership between an ovei kochavim and a Jew that owned the saffron field together. They worked in a field. And the ovei kochavim would do the work on Shabbat, and the Yisrael would do the work on Sunday. Okay, so in that way, the Yisrael never did the work on Shabbat. Atu l'kamei de Rava, shara lehu. Rava says, you guys own this field together. You're each doing work, though. The Ovei Kochavim works on Shabbat. The Jew works on Sunday in place of Shabbat. That works fine. Eiti v'Ravina l'Rava. But Ravina comes and questions Rava and says, what do you mean? There's this source that says, a Tanitic source, Yisrael v'Ovei Kochavim shekiblu sadeh b'shutfut. Okay, Yisrael and Ovei Kochavim, they have this field b'shutfut. They're arisim on this field together. They're both hired together. Lo yomar Yisrael lo ovei kochavim tol chel kacha b'shabbat v'ani b'chol. You can't say, the Yisrael can't say the ovei kochavim, you take your part on Shabbat and I will b'chol. Okay? But v'im itnu mitchila mutar. Okay? If they made a condition before they accepted to work as arisim on the field from the beginning, and the Jew says, look, you're going to take your portion on Shabbat, I'm going to take my portion on Sunday, then they basically create this split, that's allowed. But im ba'u l'cheshbon asur. But if they didn't make a tanai from the beginning, and they went to split the proceeds at the end, they said, okay, look, you got this on that day, I got this on that day. And Rashi explains here, he says, im kiblu, here, 1 second. U'ba'u l'cheshbon la'achar zman. Okay, so the last three lines of Rashi, im ba'u l'cheshbon. He says, u'ba'u l'cheshbon la'achar zman lomar, kama yimei Shabbat natalta, ata, v'ani atol k'negdan yimei chol. He says, how many Shabbatot did you do? And I'll get yimei chol compared to the number of Shabbatot. And he tries to do the calculation after the fact. That's not allowed. Okay? So we're going to see here that they're sort of missing a case, right? There's one case where they make a condition from all the way at the beginning. There's another case where when they're splitting up the profits, they start deciding, okay, well, you worked those Shabbatot, Kinegdan, I worked on Chol, and let's split a 50-50. That's not allowed. But we're going to see soon, they're going to ask, what if it's stung? They didn't specify anything, and they just split all the profits 50-50, and then, is that okay? Or is that not going to work? So, right now, they really don't talk about that case. So anyway, what does Ravina say? Ravina says here, look, it only works im hitnu mitchila. Right? So how did you allow this arrangement to work? So, ichsif. Okay, we've seen this many times where there's a story where Rabbi paskins something and then another rabbi comes and said, what were you doing? And he got very embarrassed, Rava. L'sof igali milta dihitnu meikara havu. In the end, it was revealed that, in fact, they had made an arrangement previous, you know, before they started out, and therefore it was okay that Rabbi paskins that way. Now we're going to have a different version of the story. Okay, Rav Gavia mibei Katiel Amar. Okay, Rav Gavia told what happened in this case with Rav and the saffron growers. It happened in a bit of a different way. And it wasn't saffron growers, it was something else. Amar, hanu shtile de or lahavu. Right, this is classic. We had some story. We don't know exactly what the details were, what the case was. By the way, I didn't mention, but the whole issue here is really, again, this bit of a debate about what it is. But it's the concept is a Jew getting sachar from work done on Shabbat. And the assumption is that it's viewed, the problematic part is that the, and as unless you make the arrangement mitchila that Saturdays are your day, you take all the proceeds from Saturday, I get all the proceeds from Sunday instead, and the rest we can split 50-50. But if you don't make that arrangement, then basically it's as if the non-Jew is a shaliach of the Jew when he does his work on Shabbat. And you can't have someone be your shaliach. There's a very relevant sugya in terms of what's allowed in terms of having a business and anything operating on Shabbat. You can't have someone work for you on Shabbat as your shaliach, basically, for you to be getting the sachar. I'm definitely not paskining in any way. You know, anyone who has issues with that, it's a very complicated issue. I'm just kind of mentioning a point from it here. So now, what happens? So Rav Gavia mibe katil amar hanu shtile de orla havu. The partnership between them, they were planters of orla trees. Okay, or it's not really orla trees. They were planters of trees. And the issue was not Shabbat. The issue was orla. What's orla? The first 3 years, the Jew can't benefit from the fruits. So hava ove kochavim achil shnei de orla v'Yisrael shnei de hetera. So the non-Jew, they made it, right, the non-Jew ate the fruit for the first 3 years when the Jew couldn't eat it. And the Jew ate it the years after that, right? He took the next 3 years. I forget about the fact that the first 3 years less fruits grow, so I don't know. I assume they made some arrangement about that. But that's the idea here. Atu lekame de Rava, shara lehu. And his version ends there. Okay, they came before Rava, and Rava says this is mutar. So now the Gemara asks, but wasn't there a whole vikuach? I understand you have a different version. It wasn't Shabbat. It was right. It wasn't saffron growing. It was orla. Right. They weren't arisim on a field. They were planting trees. But you forgot there was more to the story. Like the story goes on that there was a whole debate between Ravina and Rava, and Ravina brought this source. So what does he say? Oh no, l'siyue saye. The source that Ravina brought in my version was brought as a support proof. Why is it a support proof? Because what's the difference between Orla and Shabbat? Shabbat, you have the issue that if the non-Jew is working as his shaliach, so he's doing work for it, right? He's working for him on Shabbat. Now, there's no isur to work the field for the first 3 years when you have plants. There's nothing wrong with planting trees and taking care of them for the first 3 years. So here, where there's no isur malacha and there's no concern that the Jew is allowed to do whatever he wants, he just can't eat them. So there, of course, you can make an arrangement. So when he brought this bright about Yisrael v'ovei kochavim shekiblu sadeh b'shut food, this was all the point of him bringing the brighter was to show that when it's an issue of Yisur Malacha, then it's problematic. But when there's no Yisur Malacha, there's no point to make any Tanai Milachatchila, that you don't need any condition. Because there was nothing forbidden for the Jew to do that the non-Jew did for him, basically. So in other words, they just split the proceeds in a way, instead of splitting them 50-50 right now, they split it. You eat the first 3 years, I eat the last 3 years. That's totally fine. So then he says, well, what about the part in the story of Ha'ichzif, where Rava was embarrassed? He obviously wouldn't be embarrassed if Ravina brought a proof text for him. So what does he answer? Lo ayud vari me'olam. My version doesn't have that part, okay? Yes, it's true, I did forget to tell the part about Ravina bringing a proof, but I certainly didn't, I didn't know, you know, my version of the story, that never happened. Ibailu. Stama mai, so now they ask, what, this is what I mentioned before, what if stama, what if they didn't ever discuss, and they just split the proceeds 50-50, and they don't, that's number one, they didn't make up t'nai from the beginning, which would have for sure said it was mutar. But they also didn't come at the end and make a cheshbon and say, okay, you work those Saturdays, I work those Sundays instead. And, you know, obviously Sunday could be random, it could be any day. Sunday is probably the example given because many non-Jews don't work on Sunday, so it's a good example to have brought. So, in other words, right, the Christians in their day. So anyway, Yibailu Stama Mai. So what would be the case if you just said Stama? So they say, Tashma, let's learn it from the source that we saw. Imitnu mitchila mutar. So what would it imply? Only if it's nu mitchila. But Stama would be asur. But then they say, no, that doesn't prove anything, because Ema Seifa, Yibailu L'cheshbon asur. This is a classic where it gives two cases that are a little far apart from each other. This one's mutar, that one's asur, but it doesn't say anything about the middle. So therefore they say, right, and therefore from the second part you would say, hastama would be mutar, and therefore elameha leka lamashma mina. So from here you can't infer anything. So this obviously raises a very basic question, which is if the Gemara doesn't conclude here, where do we go with this? Okay? The issue with Tzhar Shabbat and a non-Jew being your shaliach is actually only Asur Midirabbanan. Some people say it's an issue of Amira La'akum. You're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbat. But most people think that it's really an issue of Bava Metzia comes up that you're not allowed to have a non-Jew do work for you because you might come to do work yourself, right? It's like a gzera of mekach u'memkach. So because of that, it's all drabanan. So some of the poskim say, oh, safek drabanan lekula. So we can be mekel in a stomach case. But others go the other direction and say, no, we really have to be machmir. And in fact, the Rambam poskins that the Rambam understands very simply, if you don't make an arrangement from the beginning, what do you have to do? Any profits made on Shabbat, the non-Jew gets. And then you split the rest of the week 50-50. So it would end up, if you had a business with a non-Jew and the non-Jew worked on Shabbat, he would get 4/7 and you would get 3/7, right? And that's obviously, if you can, you know, you would have to keep track kind of what proceeds were made on Shabbat, right? Obviously, that's kind of complicated. What's interesting about this is the Rama paskins that, they basically paskin like the Rambam, that you really, if you didn't make any sort of arrangement, then you have to split it, okay, with this 4/7 arrangement, or, you know, 1/7 he gets the Shabbat, and then the rest you split 50-50. But the Rama adds that since it's already a suffix in the Gemara, he says if it's a huge hefsed, then you can get the money. And you can take it because it's a suffix and we don't know what to do. Okay, again, it's not in Ba'ul l'cheshbon. If you start to say, well, you work that day, I work that day in place, then it's already more of an issue. But if you just split it 50-50, you know, and didn't sort of say, oh, well, you did that on Shabbat and in place I did that, which would mean he's really working as your shaliach, but you did it stam, then the Rama adds that there's room for heter if it's a huge hefsed. So it could be, you know, if it's a huge business and it's bigger hefsed, then maybe he would be more mekel. Anyway, it's a very interesting issue in terms of Shabbat and non-Jewish relations. Okay, hajan alach lefnei dehem. Okay, now brace yourselves. We're getting into a very strange section, which I actually did some research before. Okay, I want to just say a few things. What we're really going to talk right now is the first parak was mainly relations with non-Jews in terms of, you know, their holidays, making sure we stay away from Avodah Zarah, from having anything to do with aiding Avodah Zarah, with, you know, because of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, Lifnei Iver, with, you know, us having to do with idol worship. We saw some things that were not exactly related to idol worship. We also had the issue of giving something to a non-Jew and then they're doing it on Shabbat and it looks like you're doing Malacha on Shabbat and things like that. Okay, but that was the main thing. Now we're going to talk about, and we had a little bit, which is going to be similar to this, about things, concerns, we're going to see a lot of this, concerns about people killing you know, aiding them with weapons, things like that, and them engaging in bestiality, which we're going to see. Okay, so so in the introduction in the Koran, he talks about here that clearly, I'll read this paragraph, it's a good paragraph, the physical aggression as well as the spiritual and ethical depravity, is that how you pronounce it? Depravity of idolatrous Gentiles living in the Talmudic period necessitated great caution on the part of the Jews, especially those living in areas where law and order were commonly neglected. But you have to understand this in the context of where they were living and what the people around them, how they were behaving. So according to this claim, you know, the assumption is you have to read this thinking that the average non-Jew was a pretty bad person. They had no ethical standards. They had no, you know, it's hard for us to imagine because we live in a society where there's ethical standards. There's, we're going to see here, there's a case where they talk about the end of the Mishnah says you shouldn't be mityacheh with a non-Jew because they're nechshadim al shvichut damim. So the Mefarshim say that, you know, some of the Mefarshim say that if it's a place where there's law and order, and it's obviously talking about a place where if someone were to kill a Jew, nobody would bring them to court for that, okay? But if they would bring someone to court for that, then obviously we're not assuming that people are going to, you know, or I would say like this, not if they're going to bring them to court, but if they have a harsh penalty for killing, for murdering a Jew, then obviously you wouldn't have to worry about this, okay? So that you have to understand the standards, the assumption is the moral standards of these people was very low. Before we continue, I wanted to read you from, I found an article online about bestiality in ancient civilizations, okay, which I thought was a very good article. So basically, what the article claims here is that for, you know, from the beginning of time, basically, people have had sexual relations with animals. I also, by the way, looked up and there were modern articles that talk about that this is much more common than one would think. Okay? It's more prevalent among, number one, farm workers, which makes sense because they all worked with animals. You know, a large majority of the population was working with animals. And number two, in prisoners. Okay? Which I think is less relevant to these times. But in fact, they really talk about how this is quite more common than you think. People are very quiet about it, so you wouldn't really know. And yeah, I know, it's hard to believe. In fact, the article, the more modern article about what it was talking about modern day time, was saying, you know, before you read this, like, you're going to be a little sickened by what you read, which was quite sickening. And it talked about it's more common with dogs and horses, I think, was the more common one. And anyway, they, you know, there's, for people who work, they also talked about, there's a wide range. There's people who do it for, you know, all sorts of reasons. Some because they really love animals and it comes from a positive kind of place, others not. It's very hard to imagine. I just want to read to you a little bit from this article, okay? They say bestiality was practiced in Babylonia, the ancient empire of Mesopotamia, in the Code of Hammurabi. So Hammurabi proclaims death for anybody engaging in bestiality.
Which means that it was happening.
Exactly. However, during the spring fertility rites of Babylon, dogs and other animals were used for constant orgy for 7 days and seven nights. Okay, then he quotes Sefer Vayikra, where it talks about that it was very widespread in the country of Canaan, which is perhaps why the Hebrews later considered sexual relations with animals a way of worshiping other gods and put the person and the animal to death. And then he basically talks about how ancient Egyptians and ancient Greeks used it often, and they often used it in, right, they say the ancient Greeks had all this in their mythology. Egyptians engaged in worshipful bestiality with the Apis bull in Memphis and the goats at the Temple of Mendes. And they say that the ancient Greeks had it during religious celebrations and festivals, where you could see the overlap here between the fact that they did this as part of their celebratory holidays. You can see how it connects with the previous. So in a sense, they sort of say there's a different issue, but it's really intertwined according to, you know, the reality from what this person's claiming in this article. You know, they even say here in Rome, where the rape of women and sometimes by men, the rape of women by animals was used to amuse the audience at the Colosseum and the Circus Maximus. So that's the time period that we're talking about here, where that's what was going on, and they were using this as a form of entertainment. Okay, so based on that, they say, including the Emperor Tiberius and his wife Julia, Claudius, Nero, Constantine the Great, Theodore, and the Empress Irene. Okay, this was all like they would do this. Okay, so. Okay, there's a lot more to this, but I think that's enough for, you know, because I started reading this, I said, how irrelevant is this? You know, it just seems so far from our, but what I found when I looked was that, number one, it was very relevant then, and number two, it's even relevant today, believe it or not. Okay, and you keep in mind the part that I said, that most people who do it, nobody really knows, like they say, you know, X percent, I forget, I think it's like 12% of some of the male, maybe less of the female, I forget, but it was some reasonably high percentage of people. But they said you would never know because it's something that, you know, nobody really talks about and people hide it. Okay?
It's probably in certain communities where we are
so. Right, well, that's why I said no. So a certain high percentage is prisoners. So that already lowers the percentage in terms of the average person doing it. So, yeah. And a lot is farm workers, et cetera, which also isn't the average necessarily. Okay, so with that in mind, okay, so don't think that this page is a totally unnecessary, unrealistic, irrelevant page, but actually in certain circles it's somewhere relevant. Aim ma'amidim behema bepunda ka'ot shel ovdei kochavim bepnei shechashudin ala revia. We saw this before. You can't put up animals in the inns where the ovdei kochavim were sleeping because they're chashudim ala revia, and that would be lifnei iver. Velo tityached isha imahen. You shouldn't have a woman alone with an animal because they're chashudim that they'll engage in relations with the animal. And in the context of Yichud, they now mention this other thing, which is lo yitached adam imahem. You shouldn't have a person be alone with a non-Jew, an oved kochavim, mipnei shechashudin al shvichut damim. Because again, and like I said, this already is somewhat minimized because we say that's only in a place where people don't care about killing Jews, okay? Where the, you know, there's no sense of law and order where you know, when someone wouldn't be brought to trial for this. What
this
do you think?
Suggests that the isha isn't about animals, it's just about with another, with any, with
oh, sorry.
Or even another Jew.
Ah, okay, sorry, my confusion. Okay, so the woman is right. So, loti yached isha'im ahem, you're right.
Like,
we move from
it.
The animals, right, exactly. So, not only that, but you're right. A woman shouldn't be alone with a.
This is even another Jew. Jewish man.
Ah, right. So sorry. Okay. Let me put it more clearly. Right. Lo tzid yached isha'im ahen is in oved kochavim. Okay. It's a non-Jewish person because they're chashudin al arayo. Now this raises the question by some of the mafreshim. What do you mean? An isha can't be mityached with a Jew. Why is it only saying non-Jew? And they say obviously also a Jew. But here it's clearly highlighting the non-Jew. You know, that's not the issue here. The issue here is non-Jewish relations, and therefore it's talking specifically about the non-Jew. Thanks for correcting me. I got confused right now. Okay. So now the Gemara starts out and says, Uramidhi. This our Mishnah contradicts another Braita, which is, Lokhim mehem behema lekorban. You're allowed to buy an animal from a non-Jew for sacrificial purposes. Now, obviously, you can't take an animal engaged in bestiality and offer it as a sacrifice. So the Braita continues and says, "Ve'en choshashin lo mishum roveah v'lo mishum nirbah." You don't have to worry that the animal either performed sexual acts on another person or a sexual act was performed on the animal. V'lo mishum mukta. You don't have to worry that it was maybe designated to be used in idol worship. V'lo mishum ne'evad. And you don't have to be concerned that it was already used, not just designated, but also actually used for avodah zarah purposes. Because right, obviously any one of those four things would possible the animal from being used as a korban. So how is it that we can buy animals, right? So bishlama mukta v'nevad, im ita de'aktie v'im ita de'palche lo hava mazbin le. This is where you can assume that if it was worshipped, so they would never sell it to you. Anything that's worshipped to their gods is kadosh in their religion, and you can assume that they would never sell it to you. So if it was designated for idol worship or was used for idol worship, then already for sure they would never sell it to you. So it can't possibly be that. And that's why you don't have to worry about that. By the way, there's a debate about what exactly means muktzah. Is muktzah that somebody thought in their head, I'm going to use this? Or is it that they designated, put it aside, but yet nobody worshipped it yet, right? Most of the first ones say it. It's more than just designated in their minds, or, you know, it has to be that they kind of put it aside and they said this is going to be, you know, they did something more than that. What exactly the stage is debatable. Okay, but then what's the problem with this braita? How does it contradict our Mishnah? Ela roveh v'nirba lechush. Right? Shouldn't you be worried that if we're saying that avdei avodah zarah are chashudim, that they're going to engage in bestiality? So how is it possible that we can take in and buy an animal from them and not be suspect that the animal was involved in sexual relations with a human? Amar Rav Tachlifa, Amar Rav Shila Bar Avina, Mishmei de Rav. Ovei kochavim chasa behemto shelo te'aker. So an ovei kochavim has rachamim on his animal so that it not be uprooted. By the way, in the context of what I looked up, the more modern article, it talked about, first of all, there's laws in certain countries against bestiality, which also raised the question, people were saying, why would you even have to have a law about this? Okay, like in Denmark, they passed a law about it. In America, by the way, there is no law, it's allowed. But certain states have adopted laws against it. And part of the reason why people have adopted laws against it is because it's cruelty to animals. Okay, because they say that it's bad for the animal. So here you see the same type of thing. It didn't say, I didn't find anywhere where it said it actually causes the animal to become infertile, but it could be, you know, it could be one of the things. You know, they actually talked about it. I mean, again, it's very unpleasant, but the people would maybe give a shot to the animal so that the animal would be calm and, you know, they'd be able to do what they wanted to. Anyway, unpleasant. So now they say, okay, can we assume? We saw this before. The Ovei Kochavim, if he owns the animal, right? Remember, it was only in the inns we didn't want to do it, and there you would put some random animal that he didn't own. But if it's his own animal, so he's not going to do it because he doesn't want the animal leha'aker to become infertile. So then they say, Hatinach nikevot. So that makes sense only for nikevot, who that's the issue. But Tcharim ma'ika lememar, what about male animals? So Amar Rav Kahana, ho'ilu machishim babasar. it makes them thin down, right? It's not good for their bodies to engage in these sexual relations, and therefore it's also not good for the animal, and therefore you also wouldn't do it even to a male animal. So, Ella, Hadatanya, Lokhim Behemar, Mero Eshelahem. Well, but wait, there's another brighter. We're now bringing slews of, you know, a bunch of brighter that seem to offer contradictory information about this. You can buy a behema from a shepherd. So now, if the shepherd has the animal isn't owned by him. So what would you assume? The shepherd, right? The shepherd might have engaged in sexual relations with the animal, which would mean that what? You can't use it for a korban. But here it says, you can buy a behema mero eshelahem, from the shepherd and not from the owner himself. The owner himself, we're assuming, is makpid. But the ro'eh, lichush jom ravala. Why aren't you suspect? So what did they say? Ro'eh shelahem et yareh mishum efseid sachar. He's worried if he gets caught that he did that, his owner will give him less money because it's in the owner's best interest not to have the animal engage in sexual relations and therefore with the human. And therefore, the ro'eh is scared of his owner and he's not going to engage in relations with the animal. So then they say, wait, but that contradicts another source. Elaha d'tanya, ein mosrim behema l'ro'eh shelahen. So what do they say? You're not allowed to give, okay, this is more similar to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says you can't put up animals in inns, you know, have it alone with a non-Jew because you'll be over on Lifnei Iver. Likewise, you can't give your animals to a ro'eh, who's a non-Jew, because the concern is that he's going to sleep with your animal. So why? What did we just say? A ro'eh is going to be scared of his owner and worried about what he might do to the animal, right? And then the owner will get angry at him and won't pay him. So they say, Lema, why don't we say ro'eh shalahem et yareh mishum efseid scharo? So now they offer a very interesting answer. They distinguish between the last two sources, right? One is the ro'eh of the non-Jew isn't suspect, and you can buy animals from him, right? He's not suspect, but the ro'eh of a Jew would be suspect. So why would there be a difference if the owner's Jewish or not Jewish? Lema ro'esh alahem mityareh, inhu diyade bahadade mirtate. Anan de lo yadina behu lo mirtate. Since we don't engage in bestiality, it's not something that Jews do, a ro'eh who takes the animal from us won't think that we even have a havamin. Okay, he hasn't learned the Gemara. He doesn't know that we're concerned about these things. He won't think that you have a havamin that he's going to do this, and therefore we'll do it, and he won't even think that anyone's going to suspect him. But if a non-Jewish owner, since he either engages in bestiality or knows people who engage in bestiality, know that it's very prevalent, he'll be more concerned for the fact that you might do this, and therefore the ro'eh has to be super careful. Okay, and that's why, again, that's why a Jew can't give a behema to a non-Jewish ro'eh, because we're worried he'll be engaged in bestiality. However, a Jew is allowed to buy an animal for a korban from a ro'eh of a non-Jew. Okay, it's almost ironic, right? So, Amar Rabba, Hainu da'amri inshe, michtava galala baza, ragla b'chavre yada. Okay, what is this? The stylus, which is a metal utensil that they would use to carve into the shayish, okay, into the marble, into a very hard marble. So the marble knows when the stylus is coming, right, that the stylus has the power to basically cut through something as hard as marble. Likewise, ragla b'chavre yada. There's a bunch of different interpretations of what a ragla is. Some people say it's dagla. Whether it means just a sinner, whether it means a... Most people say it's a rochel, someone who walks around talking about other people knows how painful it is, you know, how bad it is when other people talk about himself, right? Like he knows how bad it is, okay? This is what we're saying. So this is the Oved Avodah Zarah is engaged in sin all the time, right? He knows what the possible things his person could do, okay? Whereas the Jew, who's not engaged in sin, doesn't even realize. It's almost like saying... They're naive, right? A naive person, right? Someone who's very straight and narrow doesn't understand what all the possibilities of all the bad things that can happen are. Okay, so that's what he's saying, that the shayish knows its stylus and what it can do to it. Okay. Ihachi, schari min kevo lo nizbun, dechashinan dilma merabele ilavai. So now they say, if that's the case, then male animals can't be bought from female animals, because we're worried that, one second, right, you can't buy from a korban, because we're worried that
male animals can't be bought from female of the kohanim.
Right, but because wait, no, they
she might have
right, right. They can't be bought. That's why I was confused. Right, tzcharim mina kevot lo nisban. We won't be able to buy male animals from female of the kohanim because we should be concerned. Dilma mirabele. Okay, because there was no concern that she's going to make them infertile because that's not going to happen.
Because it's a male, not because she's
a right, because it's a male. Exactly. So, kevan demigre ba mirtata. So, they say, kevan demigre ba.
If she did that, then it would cling to her and follow her.
Oh, right, that's the right. Ligror. We're worried that. We're not worried that the female engaged in relations with a male animal, because if that were the case, this goes back to what I told you we were going to get back to, that if the people who do this don't want anyone to know, because even in societies where this was prevalent, it was still looked at as a very odd thing, and if she does engage in sexual relations with the animal is going to follow her wherever she goes. Mm-hmm. Okay? So therefore, she's concerned she won't do that. Kevan demigreba mirtata, right? She'll be feared, mirtata, she'll be scared, because it's going to be gorera chare, it's going to follow her. So then they say, well then, this doesn't make sense. If we assume that females don't engage in bestiality because they're worried the animal's going to follow them. So then, elahadetani Rav Yosef teaches that armalata, okay, an almana, who basically isn't living with any man, doesn't have her sexual needs attended to. So therefore, an almana, lo tirbe kalaba, she shouldn't have dogs in her house. Okay, shouldn't be megadel a dog. Velo tishrei bar be'rab be'ushbiza, she shouldn't have as a guest a tami chacham, okay, a student of the, of the Beit Midrash. Okay, why is this? Bishlama bar be'rab tzniyala. Okay, we understand a student who's learning in a Beit Midrash, if he does end up engaging in sexual relations with her, he's going to be very tzanua about it and no one's going to know. In other words, if he's not a tamid chacham, so maybe he'll go talking about it and then she'll be embarrassed and humiliated and she won't want anyone to know, so she won't do that. But if it's someone who is very tzanua and won't tell anybody, then maybe she'll end up being nechshal la'avera with him. But ela kalba, kevan demigrava mirtata. Right, so why a kelev? Shouldn't we say the same thing we just said, that since the female non-Jew is not suspect of engaging in bestiality with her animal, so also the almana shouldn't be fearful of engaging in bestiality with her, we shouldn't worry that she's going to, and therefore we should allow her to have a kelev in her house, because if she were to engage in sexual relations with the kelev, so the kelev will follow her everywhere. So they say no, the kevan dechishagele umtsa umasricha batra. Right. Since she could throw meat and the animal will follow her just from throwing meat, so therefore, if the animal follows her wherever she goes, right, you can see this on the street, right? People, their dogs love them, even though they're not, I assume, engaging in sexual relations with them.
No,
so, right. So, I'm sorry if I've ruined your thinking about this. But anyway, because of that, there's other reasons why dogs might follow their female owners, and therefore, memar amar inche haide mishrocha batra mishum umtsa dekamasrich. Okay, people will say that he's following her because of the meat she has, and not because they engage in sexual relations, and therefore will never come to surface. And therefore, you should prevent the woman from being in a situation where she might accidentally end, where she might come to sleep with him, and therefore, almanot should not have dogs in their house. Okay.
Or not female dogs.
What about female dogs? Right, it's a good question. Doesn't get into that detail. Okay, nikevot. So now they say this. Okay, nikevot etzel nikevot my time alomi yafdina. Now, why can't a female? Here's where you see a female can't even have a female animal with her alone. What's the reason? We're talking about a female oved kochavim. Oh no, right. A female. You're saying a female oved kochavim can't have.
Female animals in exclusion with female idolaters.
Okay, one second. Right, that's true. And this is, that's what they're saying. It's not that she could do whatever she wants. She's never had a kohavim. But the point is that we can't, just like we said, the Mishnah said, you can't put a behema in a pundak next to, right, in an inn with an ove kohavim. You also can't have a female animal alone with a female, Oveda Kochavim. Why is that? Because it's very common that Ovdei Kochavim will go and hang out again, assuming this is an unethical type of, you know, all these people have no moral standards, so they go sleep with their friends' wives. Upamim, if he goes to sleep with her, eino motza, let's assume there's this animal alone with this woman, but the woman happens to leave her house for a few minutes. The Oved Kochavim, you know, the husband's friend comes to sleep with her, and he doesn't find her, and he's in the mood to have sexual relations. Umotzei tabeima virova, he might find the animal, and then he'll sleep with the animal. So in other words, really the issue is charim with nikevot, but since sometimes nikevot etzel nikevot can lead to a situation where it'll be male will be alone with the nekeva animal, therefore it's also forbidden. Some people say, no, even if he goes to find the woman, but he might decide he prefers the animal. Okay, right? Again, seemingly strange, but hard to understand with our reality. Okay, so here you have a source that he said, right, the behemot of Israel are more chaviv than their wives.
It's such an insulting thing to say.
It's a very insulting thing to say. Very insulting. De'amar Rabbi Yochanan b'sha'a sheba nachash al chava. But now they're going to explain why they say this. Again, an awfully strange source. B'sha'a sheba nachash al chava hitil ba zuama. Okay, he puts the zuama on her, and therefore women are considered, you know, the men, you know, the nachash put this disgusting thing on Chava, and because of that, they'd rather be with animals than with their wives. It's part of the Chet Adam HaKadmon, right?
Which is fodder for the whole original sin in Christianity and everything.
Yes. Yes, it's quite odd. Ihachi Yisrael Nami, so then what about Jews? So now they say, Yisrael Sham Du'al Har Sinai Paska Zu HaMatan. Ovdei Kochavim Shalom Du'al Har Sinai Lo Paska Zu HaMatan. Okay, so in other words, now we have this, there was this original sin, then what happened, right? So Chava sin with the Nachash, the assumption is what happened also, according to this, the Nachash had sexual relations with her and kind of put his, you know, the woman had sex with a snake, so it's a little disgusting for the man to want to have sex with her, like that's almost the concept here, if you take, you know, that she's a proto, you know, for all women. But then Yisrael kind of had this purification process at Har Sinai, which the non-Jews didn't have, and therefore the non-Jews would prefer animals to their wives. Okay, very hard source to really comprehend. I won't try to make sense of it. Okay, last question for today.
Similar about bestiality too, because the snake had sex with a woman, and then you said the Har Sinai, which stands for Miskot. We don't do bestiality.
Since we don't do it, so therefore I see. So you're saying it's a sense that maybe they're worried in general that their wives are engaged in sexual relations with animals, and therefore they're a little disgusted by their wives, whereas the problem is then, so they'll engage in bestiality, that's okay for them?
You need to only read it as a midrash on disgusted on their wives. I think it's a little micro...
Concept of bestiality and how it even went back to Nachash HaKadmon. Right, right.
Yes, because we have tonight, it's not an issue for us.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. Okay. Ibailu. Ofot mai. What about birds? So by the way, in the article I read about nowadays, so they actually mentioned birds are also part of this. Or, you know, like chickens and things like that.
It's really hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine. Tashma, da'amar Rabbi Yehuda, amar Shmuel, mishum Rabbi Chanina, ani ra'iti ovei kochavim. Okay, you're going to see, they're going to explain. It's going to get a little graphic. Unfortunately, we're going to end with this. Sorry to leave you with this image in your head. Shalakach avaz min ashuk. Okay, took a duck from the shuk. Rav'a, chanka, tzla'a va'achla. Okay, engaged sexual relations with it, choked it, roasted it, and ate it. Va'am Rabbi Yirmiyahu midifti, ani ra'iti aravi achad, I saw an aravi, shalakach yerech min ashuk. This is even more unpleasant. He took a thigh of a bird. Chakak, what?
Animal.
Of an animal? Oh, okay, it was an animal. Of an animal, chakak ba kedei rivia, and made a hole, you know, a hole that he can insert his penis in there. Rav'at sla'a v'achla. Okay, and then he engaged in sexual relations with it, roasted it, and then ate it. Okay, on that pleasant note, we will end for today.